I'm Jan Suk Fong Lee.
And I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And this is Can't Lit.
Can't Lit. Talk about books and stuff.
Working my way. Hey, Jen.
Hi.
Oh, hi. Were you singing a Britney Spears song?
I was adding some nonsensical sounds to a Britney Spears melody, possibly.
I don't remember what that song is called.
No, we were just talking about the video with Britney Spears and Stephen Dorff, where she's in a tub. She gets bonked in the head by a paparazzo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's...
And it's really, it's like really beautifully shot. It's very artful.
It's actually very cinematic.
It's very cinematic. It's very artful. I'm trying to find it right now
it's
online.
It's probably Britney Spears' best acting.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, better than Crossroads.
Almost,
don't at me.
Almost better than Crossroads.
Almost better than Crossroads.
No, better than Crossroads. Agree. There's something about like falling and
I
having
spread
wings.
My wings. I
something. Fly. It's called Every Time.
Every time I blue fly through. But I love that entire song is sung in a falsetto. Oh. It sounds like a ballerina jewelry box.
It does sound like a ballerina song.
I need your voice, Brittany. Come on, Brittany.
She's sitting in the back of this limo now, touching Stephen Dorff's
leg. And she's
leg.
Only wearing like shapewear and a coat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Notice me. Notice her, Stephen. Take her hand, goddammit. Oh my God.
Oh yeah, this is the part I remember where she's like running angrily through the backstage of a concert.
Wearing a baseball cap with the shapewear now.
Baseball cap? No, she has a t-shirt or a men's shirt with the shapewear.
No pants though.
Oh, Stephen Dorff is throwing a pot of flowers. Wow, is this compelling podcasting?
I must say, this is an underrated song.
I like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are we going to have to pay for this?
I must have I feel my blood without my wings. I feel so small. She feels small.
I guess I need you, baby.
Okay, anyway, so that's where we're at. So drink that in.
Yeah, hello.
Can you guess
the
theme of this episode? I don't think anyone can from this intro.
It's revision.
It is.
And working with an editor, because you could just be wearing shapewear and a coat.
I mean, I do think the video does relate to that. Yeah, like a baseball cap for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think that song and video probably did require a lot of vision and revision.
Oh, what a segue. Dina Del Bucchia.
Just trying
Cheers
really
to
hard.
You.
Thank
Cheers
you.
Cheers to you. This podcast is great.
It is great.
It's going off the rails right now.
I'm glad that you said it was great because I also agree that it is great. So, Jen, I'm going to ask you a question.
Ask me a question.
I feel like this is a real softball question, but maybe it's going to turn into a knotball.
Well, I might have a lot to say.
Yeah. I want to know how many different editors you've worked with.
Because
I know you've had quite a few.
One, two. Three.
Well, you can
Four?
Count. Jen can count.
Five,
One.
Six.
Two.
Eight. At eight.
Eight.
Total, yeah.
That's a lot.
I think it's a new one every book. Except for there might be two that share. Yeah, the two. No, none of them share. They might be the same company, but different editors.
So that was going to be sort of my follow-up to the question is, so in working on different projects, potentially with the same publisher or imprint or whatever, so you've never had the same editor?
I don't think so. For two books in a row? I don't think so.
Interesting.
I mean, any of my former editors who are friends of the podcast might tell me I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you think that impacted... the editing process for each of those books or the revision process?
I was definitely more impact earlier in my career. I think that now that I'm further along, I think editors are slightly more afraid of me and they ask me to do less. Please don't ever be afraid of me that you don't ask me to do things. But the earlier in my career, I think the end of East specifically was very much shaped by who I worked with at Knopf, who is Kendall Anderson. And that one was, you know, we were shaping something that was not quite a novel into a novel with a plot and a trajectory and a cast of characters and all those things. So I was super, super affected by that. I think that The Better Mother was actually, was mostly edited by Amanda Lewis, but it was also edited by committee, by several different people at Penguin Random House Knopf. And that was a real experience. So I don't know. I don't know if it's, I will say each editor taught me different things about the writing process, no matter what genre I was writing in. So I think that like at Orca, who publishes my kids' books, that it was a huge learning experience. And Sarah Harvey, ooh, she's edited two of my books, actually, Sarah, has really taught me so much about writing for children and certainly affected that. I mean, I think for my fiction, I don't know that a new editor would affect a new novel so much. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like each of them have taught me something that I've carried into the next, whatever my next project has been.
So you've been taught something. Would you say that one taught you pleasure, one taught you pain?
Sorry. I mean, any Ariana Grande reference is a good reference, in my opinion. Some experiences were
sorry. It was really hard not to go there.
No. I'm going to be honest that some experiences are definitely more enjoyable than others.
Yeah, I mean,
And that's not necessarily a function of who the editor is or how they work. It's often a function of where you are as the author in your life, what you're writing, what the genre is, also how far along you are in the process when the manuscript gets acquired. Like, there's all sorts of factors at play there. And it's not just the dynamic between editor and author, I would say.
Not to say that there isn't something to be said for the specific editor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that obviously is a contributing factor.
I have favorite editors, as we all do.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, I think we can shout. Who has been your favorite editor, Dina? We can say that.
Oh, I mean, I'm really lucky in that with, I have 5 books. I would say 4 of them were edited.
Sorry.
One of them was not. So all of those people, Robin So, who was a freelance editor who worked on Don't Tell Me What to Do, Sachiko Murakami, who worked on both Blind Items and Rom-Com, and Nikki Reimer, who worked on my new book, It's a Big Deal, all great experiences. Mm-hmm. In terms of actually working with them, getting their feedback, having conversation, et cetera, et cetera. Like with Sachi, Daniel and I sat together and would Skype with her.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was super nice. And again, that also is a benefit of, I think this happens possibly more often in the poetry world, but like it's so small and we know each other so well that you are friends with sometimes your editor. So you have the advantage of asking for maybe something a little more that you wouldn't necessarily potentially get if you were working with someone that you didn't know. Mm-hmm. So that's not always what you're going to get. But it's definitely something that's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that also speaks to something in terms of revision and working with an editor that I think sometimes you do have to ask for things.
You do, actually.
And I think this is something that I didn't know when I started publishing. And I, unlike Jen, I've never worked with a bigger press. Mm-hmm. I've only worked with independent presses, which I am very grateful for. But I think the impression is that when from TV, movies, hearing about publishing relationships, thinking back to like, you know, your Raymond Carver, Gordon Lish relationship type stuff. Like, I think that there are sometimes assumptions that people make about the types of relationships you can have with an editor and how much you can work together and do that work. And often that's 100% not the case. Like you don't get the feedback that you want to get. You aren't able to work on something with the time that you would like to.
Yes.
And there are deadlines and there's all this stuff that totally impacts the type of relationship you can have with an editor.
Yeah. All sorts of factors go into that. I mean, I think that I've had really different editing experiences across the board. I would say that maybe not my favorite, but for sure the most joyful editing experiences were with Chrissy Calhoun, who edited The Conjoined for ECW Press, an independent publisher, and largely because There's a character in my novel who's a police officer, and she started calling him Hot Cop, capital H, capital C.
I'd love that. I mean, that's still, you still reference Hot Cop as Hot Cop.
That was Chrissy who came up with that for the podcast.
Chrissy is obviously a genius.
And I remember one draft, she didn't make very much, many comments, but one of the main comment was, more Hot Cop, please. And I was like, sure.
You're like, I can deliver on this. Oh, isn't that a dream note?
Yeah, that's a dream note because it's fun and it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
And it means that you've done some good work with that character so much that somebody wants more of it. So that feels good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to come back to this in a minute, like editing and working with editors, because I have a lot of thoughts. But I also wanted to say, I have people that I share my work with, and I know that you do too. Yeah. Like, but one of the things, my favorite feedback that I ever got was recently with Daniel Zamparelli, who either I've written books with or has given me notes on almost all of my books that I've published. And one thing he wrote about, It's a Big Deal, was I had a one particular poem and he was like, why don't you have more LinkedIn jokes here? And I was like, oh, this is a great note that I would love to work with. And he often does that to me, where he'll be like, I don't think you're making enough jokes about this. And when we're talking about editing poetry, you're not necessarily thinking, I need to punch up my manuscript with jokes. But I personally do.
Yeah.
And so for me, having someone that knows the types of things that I want to include, he's like, well, this poem has all of the emotional content and the ideas and everything else. So you're just like now punching it up to enhance this part of it.
Yeah.
And so to have someone that knows that, whether it's an editor or whether it's a trusted person in your writing community or your writing life, is so great.
Cause it kind of like, okay, when those kinds of notes, it's because the reader is picking up what you're putting down,
mm-hmm.
which is good for you because then you know what's working and it needs to be expanded upon, which is a good note. And I think editors take note, really. And I mean, one of the things that I think, because like I'm an editor also, right? So like when I do edit people's manuscripts for publication, so much of it is, hey, this is great. Can we put this here and put this here and add some more and add some more? And you know, writers love that. That is like an easy, like not easy, but that's like a something that makes, that's an edit that makes everybody feel good.
It's an edit that makes a writer, I think, motivated to keep going. And I do a lot of manuscript consults for the most part for free because I hate myself. No, I don't hate myself, but I just know that there's a lot of people that need and want help. Yeah, and sure. I'm friends with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So I'm reading a lot of stuff. And that's all. The first thing for me, if I'm giving feedback, is pass one positive notes.
Oh,
because I just want to make sure that I'm getting in the stuff so that people know this is great. This is working. I liked this. I also write a lot of weird notes where like, I'll write lol in all caps 10 times if something is capturing my attention. Like I'm writing my notes as I talk most on the podcast or with people.
Yeah.
I'm giving the notes in my voice. And so I'm not limiting that. And I actually also value that in an editor. When an editor is just like, or a friend or whoever it is just delivering feedback in a way that they would speak to me.
Yeah. And I think that makes the editing author relationship much more personal mm-hmm. and more on a human level. Because so much of this editing relationship, and this is something that I think people don't talk about enough, so much of this editing relationship is done online. So you don't now, I mean, this is different from like 20 years ago. So much of it is done online that kind of connection between two humans isn't made, you know, necessarily with every book or with every project. So making sure that as an editor, that your comments are really human, are really on a, like a, you know, peer to peer level is really key. And I will say that, you know, for years I was a writer and not an editor. And then, now that I'm editing, it's real privilege, actually super privilege, to be able to edit these books and to see them become something so remarkable and extraordinary. And it's been one of the greatest joys of my life, actually. It's been like, I love doing it, and it's a privilege and an honor. So if any of my authors are listening, I love you guys. All
yeah,
you.
I agree. Anytime that anyone at whatever stage of their manuscript or their work, whether it's a single poem, regardless what it is, allows me to read their work and is asking for feedback.
What an honor, right?
I totally feel, totally privileged, totally honored. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. So I kind of want to flip for a moment and talk about, frankly, some concerns I have overall about And I mean, maybe I'm totally talking out of school and people will be like, you asshole.
Let's talk out of school.
You asshole. But I think I am concerned that not enough editing is currently available to authors who want it. Yeah. And I think it seems like relationships that writers could have with their editors doesn't always exist.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think,
let's talk about that.
I think I love small presses, and I think this also probably happens with the big houses too now.
All presses, really.
But I think, yeah, overall, like, sometimes they take on too many books, which obviously is often to facilitate that grant money. Like, there are limitations that are already in place. There are systemic limitations that are already there to the type of editing work and just overall the work that the people who are paid to be a part of publishing for them to do. And so, I mean, this is one of the reasons, again, I loved working with Arsenal. It was great, but I actually ended up asking for, and I've talked about this before, asking for more editing because I was concerned about my book.
Yeah.
And it ended up being fine, and it totally worked out, and it was great. Yeah. And the editor was great, and Arsenal was great, and everything was great. But I didn't want to be in a position where I felt like I didn't do the right work and I didn't get the edits that I felt like the book should have had.
Yeah.
And so I'm lucky that I felt comfortable
asking
and putting myself in that position. But if that had been my first book, I might not have done that, because with my first book, I hardly got any edits, and it was like, there's tons of stuff now that I would have changed about it. I love my first book. It's wonderful. There's tons of fun stuff in it. It looks really great, but there are definitely opportunities that I felt like I missed out on as a result of not being able to do that. Yeah. So I don't know.
How do I feel?
And yeah, like, and all the successes of that book, of any book that comes out, whether it was edited, I think, to the correct capacity or not, reflects on the publisher. So like, if a book is successful, that still reflects on the publisher, even if, say, a freelance editor and like a writer, because writers all the time pay for a freelance editor to look at their work before they publish.
Yeah.
Like, that is obviously also great for freelance editors, but it speaks to sort of the gig economy overall and the way that time and resources and all these other things are expended. And I just think it's kind of fucked up and it's kind of stressful, and it's just a lot for everybody, for the presses, for the writers, for the editors. Like, it's a lot.
I will say that I've never felt under edited, which is a great privilege in my life that I've never felt under edited. And if any of my authors are listening and you've ever felt under-edited by me, please let me know. But I will say that, like, the editing I do for, like, Buckwriter Books and Will Suck and Win, I get paid per book, right? Like, it's part of the gig economy, as you say. And I think that the amount that editors get paid, it can be very easy to under-edit. You know, here's the thing, is how I feel about it, is that, And you know, any other editors who, you can at me with any of this stuff.
I feel the same about other writers. Like, I would love to hear about your experience.
I'd love to
hear it. I know that there are some people that just, they're ready to go. Their work feels like whatever it feels, but
here's, I think, a solution to sort of under editing versus over editing versus not editing enough or just the right amount or whatever, is that when you're reading as an editor, it's quite easy to see where the problem areas are. It's not rocket science, right? Like, this is what you're paid to do.
Yeah.
You can see where the problem areas are. And I think where editors get so tied up in time and whether they're getting paid enough to do this is when they start suggesting solutions. And I often feel that when there is a problem area, what you need to do is say to the author, this is the problem area. You could do this, but hey, I want to hear your idea.
Yes, I totally agree.
So then the author knows that it's the problem area. They're not getting under-edited because they know that they have to come up with a solution, and you're not spending hours and hours and hours coming up with solution A, solution B, solution C.
You're also not doing like some prescriptive work where you're like, well, this is how it should go. This is the rule here.
And also like whatever solution,
huge fucking problem.
Whatever solution editor comes up with, most authors are not going to take it anyway. They're going to take some other route, which is fine, as they should. It's their book.
Yes, I totally agree. Like, trying to, I mean, and this is something that Like I spent time in workshops. You've spent time in workshops. And I think it's always about note giving and suggestions, or it should be.
It should
never be about like, if I was going to do this, I would do this. And when I instruct students, and I'm sure you do similarly, like if we're talking about each other's work, you are speaking to the work as it exists. And your goal is to help the writer make the improvements that are going to facilitate the writing that already exists.
Yes.
The story, the poem,
yes.
Whatever it is. You're not trying to change it into something that you would do. You're not trying to transform it into this whole other thing that is completely outside the world of whatever that piece of writing is. And so to me, that's what I got out of workshops. I know that, I mean, that's what I learned to do. That's a skill that I got. But that's not to say everyone in a workshop does that. They definitely do.
No, they definitely don't.
But I wish more people would understand it in those terms. Like,
it's not telling authors what to do. It's asking the question so that the authors can examine their own work and interrogate their own work and come to their own solution.
Yes.
And I actually think it takes less time to ask the question rather than coming up with the solution.
For sure.
If that makes any sense at all. And and I would love for other editors to weigh in and let me know how they approach it. But sort of like my philosophy is ask the right question, and then the book that is supposed to emerge from this manuscript will.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. The other thing, just kind of going back to workshops and revision and thinking about that, like when I started writing, I think this is also why it took me so long to finish things. There was no training necessarily in how to take those notes and turn them into a new manuscript, to turn them into a new story. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the actual revision process after absorbing notes and suggestions and potentially, prescriptive or directives that are maybe not to the work. Mm-hmm. So that was self-taught for me a lot afterwards. And, so I was never sure if things were finished because again, that obviously is something that is a case by case thing. And you start to figure that out as you practice more.
Yeah. That's something that's a practice.
For sure it is.
Yeah.
But it also, getting notes isn't necessarily instructive in terms of revision. And I just think that's really interesting. Like, I just didn't know until I started to get older, like what I was supposed to do, how I was actually supposed to revise, and how to navigate any type of feedback I was getting. And I think, I think that so much of that has to do with just, in some ways, the nature of sort of that Iowa workshop style where you're just getting information and you're supposed to absorb it and then magically transform it into something else.
Well, this is the magic of the editor-author relationship.
For sure it is.
Is that any time during that process, you can 100% ask your editor, this is what I think I should do to solve this problem, but is it the right thing to do?
Yeah.
And that's what the editor is there for.
For sure.
So like it should be a conversation.
It shouldn't be a conversation.
I give you 10 pages of notes and you do everything I say. That's not the way that works.
Or you just get 10 pages of notes. And again, you don't understand how to navigate those notes. Mm-hmm. I know you also have a writing group that you
I
have
experience do, with. That we've been and together forever.
Yeah. I've been with mine since 2014, almost 15 years.
2002.
Yeah. We were 2004.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one of the things that helped me understand how revision could work because I was able to have that conversation. I wasn't in this sort of muzzled workshop environment. Not that I think workshops are bad,
but
it's that thing where you're not like in a lot of times when I was younger, like you're in the workshop and you aren't allowed to talk. You aren't allowed to ask questions. You weren't allowed to do all these things that actually would help you, facilitate a conversation around your work that would allow you to understand how to make those changes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think my writing group allowed me to have conversations. And I also, over the years, we read to each other in the group, which is really interesting.
Yeah, that's cool.
So we're not reading stuff. We are experiencing it in the moment. And so I would get to experience like how people made changes in their work.
Oh, and that's exciting.
Yeah. And understand also afterwards in the conversation part, why they made changes and how they took our notes if they did. And that's what helped me understand how revision could be so useful to me, how I could write something that wasn't shitty.
How do you write something that's not shitty?
Yeah, like that's
isn't that the question?
That's kind of what I learned.
That's
so
the question.
I mean, maybe if you also kind of want to speak to a little bit to your writing group and how that's maybe impacted your revision process or.
Yeah, you know, I think that what is so interesting about my writing group, which is June Hutton and Mary Novick, both wonderful writers with wonderful
my
novels.
My writing group is really big and there's 8 of us.
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I will say that I think that the three of us are so very different. Our perspectives are different. Our feedback style is different. And so for me, one of the main things that I get from it is that everybody is going to have a different perspective on your work. And hearing all the feedback is valuable, but what the skill you almost have to hone is how to separate feedback that is going to be useful for you and feedback that isn't. And I think being in a writing group helps you hone that. And it's not that, you know, everybody's feedback is valuable, but some things you will use and some things you won't. I mean, this is the way it is. And you have ownership of your own work. That's a decision only you can make. And I think that hearing the feedback on a consistent basis helps you develop that skill so that eventually when you do end up having a contract with a publisher and you're working with an editor, you already have the skill of being able to say, no, not this one. Yes, this one.
Yes.
Yeah.
I totally agree. And I think, again, I think being in workshops and being in a writing group and working with editors over time, you just start to, you know, understand how to take certain notes and be like, this is what's valuable about this.
Yes.
And this is what's valuable about this. And this wasn't really valuable, but maybe this is something to also think about for the future.
Yeah, like something to put in the back of my head.
Yeah. Like it's not necessarily for this particular piece,
but something to think about.
Totally. And again, this is not to say that there was not feedback that you sometimes get where you're just like, this completely misses the mark. And that's also understanding, like learning from all of that to be like, oh, this did not get my work. These particular notes are in no way actually about what I wrote. And people, this totally missed the mark.
I mean, I think that what I would say to like emerging writers is that no editor expects you to do everything they say. Absolutely no editor expects that.
No.
But also, if you do get a contract with a publisher, that the editor is only editing your work because they love it. They're not editing it because they fucking hate it. So please remember that. That the editor is working on this book because the book is great and they want to work on it. So there is a lot of, a lot of people have like super emotional reactions to edits, which I think is understandable because you're working on a book you're very emotionally connected to with it as you should be. And when it comes time to like that kind of professional relationship, it can be really hard to hear the feedback, but always, always keeping in your brain that your editor loves your book, would not be working on it if they didn't. So keeping that in mind and understanding that they only want your book to be the best that it can be. And absolutely no editor expects you to do 100% of what they say. None. Nobody.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
One other thing that I wanted to bring up, and maybe you also have something to say about this.
I mean, I probably do.
I am really bad at reading books about writing.
Oh, I don't do it.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't think this is a monologue, but I just wrote some stuff here that I had to remind myself.
I think sometimes we're both writing teachers and we kind of are supposed to read those books.
I just, you know what? I wonder if this is a Leo thing. We can discuss this with other Leos.
Don't tell me what to do.
Yeah, kind of. But I have tried over the years and at the recommendation of people I really love and I really respect.
Yeah,
and I try and they never feel interesting to me.
God, never.
Okay. I thought maybe you would have a different perspective, but also I'm glad that you don't because I love our shared brain. And that's on me. I'm not saying that these books are not valuable to other people.
Oh, no. And I think they have a lot of value to other people. For
me, and again, maybe you also, and I already sort of said this, but to me, being in conversation with people is always a better learning tool for me than something that is, again, more prescriptive, or more, I mean, I think this is also partially why I write so many poems and weird things that kind of play with the concept of instruction, because I think it always kind of fucks me up. Like, yes, do I love a recipe because I want to bake the most beautiful cake? or cookies? Of course I do. But at the same time, I just want it to be like really quick. I don't want to read about your fucking experience writing some shit. Like this I tried to read. Like I tried to read Bird by Bird. I tried to read Stephen King's On Writing. Yeah, like sure. I'm sorry, Anne Lamott, and I'm sorry, Stephen King. Like
I'm sure they're great books.
They are. And I know that they're valuable to other people, but for me, it was not. And so this particular segment of this episode is just to let you know that if you are a person who also does not find value in these books, you are not alone. Jen and I are here with you.
I've taught some courses that require a text.
Yeah, me.
And that was a real humdinger for
me.
It's
hard.
I don't believe in any texts, which is a personal thing.
Sure.
But I will say that I think that... we learn things. I am much more likely to assign a novel to somebody or a poetry book or a short story and say, I think you might learn something from this rather than a manual on writing.
I totally am in that same camp in terms of learning things, in terms of understanding things. For me, also, some of the best things I've learned about craft have come from those Paris Review interviews where it's on fiction, on poetry, and having, so that conversational thing for me is always much more instructive and interesting and engaging for me. Yeah. And conversation in general with
conversation
people is much more engaging for me on an instructional level than reading something. But again, I know that some people don't respond to that. So I just kind of just wanted to bring it up. It's definitely a thing for me.
Before we leave this topic, is that I was struggling because I have a poetry book coming out and I was struggling with the poetry. And I emailed, I think, friend of the podcast, Kayla Zega.
Definite friend of the podcast, former guest.
Yeah, former guest who works with me at the Writer Studio Online and is the poetry mentor there. And I emailed Kayla and I said, I'm really struggling with this. Can you help me? And bless Kayla Zega's heart. Sent me a very lovely email outlining all the things that she would do or say with this particular topic. Helped me so much. Listen, I'm 42 years old.
Jen, I don't know why you are not sending me your whole manuscript.
I mean, I will.
Okay, great. I'm ready for it. It's basically all I want to read. I just want to read Daniel's new short stories that he's writing one by one. Yeah. Sorry, spoiler alert. And then I want to read.
I mean, be ready for some poems all about red leather pants and lipstick. Yeah, that's what they're all about.
That's what I want. that's what I want. That's what I want.
That's what we all want.
That's what I want. Red leather pants and lipstick.
Every time I've got time there.
I feel so small. I guess I need you, baby. See, that's the thing. It does all come around to we need the other people in our community, in our circle of writers. Mm-hmm. We need our editors. Mm-hmm. We need people to understand the work that we're trying to do. And I understand that sometimes there are difficult author-editor relationships, and that is not cool. But I hope that in good faith, for the most part, people are trying to
just make the best book possible.
Yeah. Do work together to make the best book possible.
Yeah. I think so. I think that's what everybody wants. That's the goal.
That's what everybody wants.
That's the goal. It should be the goal. Listen to us, Canlit.
Yeah. You know who agrees with us? Rosie McDougall.
She's wrapped in a blanket.
She is. I'm going to definitely share that photo when this episode comes out of a tiny Rosie in a little blanket burrito. Jen, do you have any last minute hot tips?
You know what? Just make the best book possible with all the people that you can gather in your community to help you. And it's going to be great.
I 100% agree with Jen. And I feel like finding the people that can work with you, whether it's an editor, whether it's a writing group, whether it is a person, whether you have the funds to pay someone to work on your manuscript, whatever it is, find the best person that's going to serve your work the best. Also, you're all the best. And I can't wait to read your books.
We love you.
Thank you for listening. Bye.